Today in the studio, it's the early best of the Kinks. All day and all of the night. All day and all of the night. All day and all of the night. Oh yeah, you really got me now. You got me so I can't see my mind. You really got me. You really got me. You really got me. I'm so tired. Tired of waiting.
Kinks never fitted in with it, and particularly I think it's my fault, because I became the front man of the band and I was the most secretive person imaginable. I didn't want anybody even to take my picture. And of course, when you're a front man, you have to be splashed everywhere. You know, you have to be more of a whore than the others, if that's possible. Hello, Elaine. Even though we could be regarded as a mainstream band, but within our peers, you know, we're regarded still, I think, as outsiders, which is fine by me. That's why, you know, I think there are lots of newer bands come along and they kind of identify with us, because we're not really, I suppose if they're the children of a family, not like older relatives, we're kind of sort of vagrant uncles have come back to the house, you know, Sunday for the free meal.
I'm celluloid heroes. Never really die.
In the studio, I'm Ray Davies of The Kinks with Red Beard.
The Kinks were an integral part of the British invasion, along with the Beatles, Rolling Stones, and The Who, among others. But the career path of The Kinks went off on a somewhat different tangent early on, partly because of fate, but partly because The Kinks didn't feel like part of the club. For a songwriter like Ray Davies, who spent much of his adult life lobbing musical mortars at the stratified British class system, being an insider, a part of any group or movement, would have prevented Davies from writing about the two things that he captures so well: loneliness and self-loathing. And what band other than the Kinks has influenced more musical styles over four decades? Heavy metal would not even exist without Kinks guitarist Dave Davis's fuzzbox tones. Just ask Ozzy Osbourne. John Lydon, also known as Johnny Rotten of the seminal British punk rockers The Sex Pistols, credits the Kinks as a template for both their raw sound and attitude. Even platinum-selling English band Oasis point to the Kinks as influences. Here's Kinks songwriter and lead singer Ray Davies in the studio.
It would be wonderful if all the material was with one company, like the Beatles were signed to EMI forever. You know, their whole career was there. But we didn't. We've been with like three or four companies, and they all get very possessive, you know. I think recording companies are worse than ex-wives. I think they hang on to things longer, and they get more, and it gets more cruel and more sort of trivial the more you deal with them. And especially when you leave them, they like to hang on to everything. So to get the record, the various people, you know, there's, again, talking about egos, the various egos at recording companies that we've been with will never do deals together. And it's a pity, really, because it would be nice to have all the songs at one point in one home. So this recording, all these tracks together, I don't think you'd hear them anywhere else, legally.
I'm not content to be with you in the daytime. Girl, I want to be with you all of the time. The only time I feel alright is by your side. Girl, I want to be with you all of the time. All day and all of the night. All day and all of the night. All day and all of the night. I believe that you and me last forever. Oh yeah, all day and night I'm yours, leave me never. The only time I feel alright is by your side. Girl, I want to be with you all of the time. All day and all of the night.
Kinks went all the way to number two with All Day and All of the Night in November 1964. Led by the Beatles, Rolling Stones, The Who, and The Animals, the Kinks certainly were at the forefront of the British invasion back then, but Ray Davis maintains that the Kinks were misfits even among those cultural rebels.
We never really fitted in with any... I guess we're British, part of the British invasion and all that, but we never really fitted in with most of those groups of people. I don't know, we just didn't get along. You know, yes, I like Mick Jagger, he's a nice bloke, and Keith is a wonderful laugh, a great guitarist, and I don't know, I just didn't feel part of it. I was doing it for another reason, and I just came into the band so I could, because I'd walked out of art college, and I wanted to make money quickly, so I could go and study art in another country, because I felt that England wasn't the place for me to be. I wanted to go and study art in Italy, or the latest thing, or the last thing I tried to do was get into Polish film school, which was the hip thing to do then. And I thought, you really got me if that was a hit. It would pay for my schooling. Unfortunately, I had to do follow-ups, but then it turned into something else. I found my own art through that. So I was doing it, everyone does it for different reasons, but the Kinks never fitted in with it. And particularly, I think it's my fault, because I became the front man of the band, and I was the most secretive person imaginable. I didn't want anybody even to take my picture. And of course, when you're a front man, you have to be splashed everywhere. You know, you have to be more of a whore than the others, if that's possible. And I rejected all that. So we turned into the great invisible band that nobody really knew what we looked like. Then everyone knows the name, but they don't really put the faces to it. What do you do for a living? It's the whole thing, you know, you meet somebody on an airplane. But for the most part, the people you wouldn't expect, like the guys who work for the Bank of England, you know, are Kinks fans. And for the most part, people don't know who I am. And that's, I kind of like that. Because I can still write, you know, like R.D. in my book. He still wrote in secrecy and privacy, even though the world had forgotten him. Yeah, it's like, it's that sort of thing. I couldn't cope with this high-profile stuff, like poor old Mick Jagger and Jerry Hall, you know, just have to have a quarrel and they're on the front page, in England anyway. I just couldn't cope with that, go mad. No, in the dark bars and cafes, that's my zone.
You got me so I don't know what I'm doing. Yeah, you really got me now. You got me so I can't sleep at night.
You Really Got Me, that was a number one record in England, the top 5, top 10 here. We just went in to make the record for our own satisfaction and get it to sound the way we wanted it to sound. Because if you make records, go in the studio and aiming it at and targeting it at a market and just solely make music for that, I think you're just no longer a creative person. I see part of what I do now is having sort of a vision all the way through, beginning to end. It's not really making records, it's just pursuing a personal goal.
A few years ago, Kink's songs You Really Got Me and Tired of Waiting for You were each used in high-profile TV ad campaigns. So I asked the author of these songs, Ray Davis, his thoughts on Madison Avenue's increasing use of rock music to sell products in the 21st century.
I don't watch a lot of television, but I haven't seen the ads yet. But everybody asks me about them, yeah. You see, I must point out at this stage, I don't have control over those two songs. So the judgment call is, as long as you're not doing harm to people and telling them to do something which is kind of completely wrong, and provided you're not bringing the copyright into disrepute, I suppose there's not much you can do about it. For many, yeah, you know, at the end of the day, there might be royalties in it, you never know. But I don't necessarily have control over that. And it's all down to taste, I think. So if it was a choice between having my song performed badly by a sort of cheesy cover or having the original Kinks version, I'd go for the original version, because it's not saying that Van Halen is a cheesy cover. I mean, they can get other people exactly to duplicate it. So I'd rather they could use the original, because people will think it's us anyway. But the whole thing with You Really Got Me and the way we recorded it and subsequently the way Van Halen covered it in a more, I guess, aggressive form, was because it grabbed attention. And that's an attention grabber, that opening. And so you're dealing in a commercial world and you've got the advertising sponsors saying, what can we get to grab attention? They'll get something like You Really Got Me every time, or Beethoven's Fifth or something. It's all to do with what sells. But divorcing, you know, but are we saying that You Really Got Me is going to make people buy cars? I'm not sure. It's just a device to draw people's attention, probably, to the television set. It's a very, very subjective thing.
Till I met you, but you keeping me waiting all of the time. What can I do? It's your life and you can do what you want. Do what you like, but please don't keep me waiting. So tired, tired of waiting, tired of waiting.
That's The Kinks' Tired of Waiting, a number one song in the UK, number six in America in early 1965. Recently, it was used to sell ketchup on TV. Here's the writer and singer, Ray Davis.
I am wary of the advertising world, but it's all this, the culture's so intermingled now. You know, what's art anymore? What is selling out? What's being commercial? You know, you've got ballet companies, you've got orchestras being sponsored by automobile and foundations for endowment of the arts. It's also it's interacting so much now. But I wouldn't say that we've sold out. I think our music has been, it carries it on to a new audience. I know what's going to happen now. I'll do a date, or the Kinks will go on tour. We'll play somewhere like Utah, and people will be shouting out for the Nissan ad. or we'll play it, and they'll say, "Oh, you played that Van Halen song really well."
Picture yourself when you're getting old. Sat by the fireside, pondering on. Picture book, pictures of your mama, taken by your papa a long time ago. Picture book of people with each other, to prove they loved each other a long time ago. A picture of you in your birthday suit, sat in the sun on a hot afternoon. Picture book, your mama and your papa, and fat old Uncle Charlie out cruising with their friends. Picture book, a holiday in August, outside of bed and breakfast at sunny South End. Picture book of people with each other, to prove they loved each other a long time ago. No, 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 no. No, 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 no. Picture book. Picture book.
The Kinks with the delightful Picture Book, which was used in an award-winning Hewlett-Packard digital photo TV ad in 2005. Up next, Ray Davis recalls the Kinks song that was banned in several countries. I'm Redbeard, and you're in the studio for the Kinks Ultimate Collection.
Welcome back in the studio. I'm Ray Davis of the Kinks with Redbeard.
Thanks, Ray. Though in the first half of their 40-year career, the Kinks and their peers were often portrayed as threats to decency, songwriter and lead singer Ray Davis feels that time has validated rock and roll's contributions to a better society, and each day, history ennobles it.
And not until I'd written X-Ray, my book. It wasn't until I finished that I realized the people that influenced me, my real career was based on an area like less than a mile square, Muswell Hill, Highgate, where I grew up, two villages in London, and all the characters I saw there. So I learned a lot there, and I learned that people are interesting because of their faults. The perfect characters didn't interest me at all. It was the people that had a bit of edge to them, kind of hid away in cafes behind the shadows so nobody noticed them. They were the people that I was drawn to. And I suppose that that carried on in my writing and songwriting and lyric writing. I think that when the Kinks first came to America, there was a big gulf in understanding. Even sense of humour was different. It still is to a degree, but it was drastically different then. But that, those barriers have been broken down through rock music, through pop songs, through people coming over with ideas. I remember when we first recorded Lola, it was banned in Australia and a few other countries because it, you know, it dealt with, I don't know, someone who's a transvestite, a transsexual. But now it's commonplace. I mean, transsexuals are accepted as part of society. That's how the world evolves. That's how, and I think that the latter part of this century has been, I think, a slightly better place, I think, because of rock music. I think it's really broadened people and made people sort of more, less judgmental on others and actually try to understand other cultures rather than turning it into a violent, drug-crazed world. I don't think rock and roll's contributed that much. I think that the drug culture was emerging in the 50s and the 40s. It was there in the 30s, but they called it something else. The only thing that's happened is, I think, the ordinary people have become, you know, part of that culture. Whereas, you know, that you've got all the stories in Hollywood in the 30s were people like doing lots of cocaine and doing drugs to stay sharp and stay on the set and look great. I wouldn't blame the culture on rock and roll. I think rock has improved the culture. Even some of the stuff that's possibly banned on radio. You know, I think we've got a really discerning, for the most part, audience out there. I mean, people can make their own minds up about records. I'm not saying that people should have the right to put out sheer abuse on the radio and just for the sake of it, just to grab attention. You know, the audience will know. They'll turn off eventually.
I met her in a club down in Old Soho, where you drink champagne and it tastes just like Coca-Cola. C-O-L-A-Cola. She walked up to me and she asked me to dance. I asked her her name and in a dark brown voice she said hello. She nearly broke my
From the August 1970 single, and then in December, the album, Lola vs. Power Man and the Money Go Round, Lola was a huge hit, controversial to be sure, but it served to distinguish the Kinks from their British Invasion brethren from there on. The sheer number of Kinks' original albums, compounded by the blizzard of compilations on a myriad of labels around the world, certainly can't be an efficient way to manage a career. Ray Davis comments.
After a while, you know, you get to live with it. You learn to live with it because I used to be very precious about my songs, you know. I remember recording a song called Waterloo Sunset, and I didn't even let the band hear the lyrics until it was mixed. And it gets a bit like it's stupid, really, because it's meant to be heard by people. I find that now, in order to survive and not go completely mad, you just take it with a pinch of salt. And I've got a huge collection of demos I've done at home and lyrics and things that nobody will really ever hear. And so let's say that that's my own private collection. And the demos are always mine because nobody wants to put demos out. It don't matter much to me anymore. I mean, writing it's the most important thing. But the only thing that really irks me, I guess, is the fact that the tapes fall into the wrong hands occasionally. You know, modern things like bootlegging, and it's so easy to do copies now, and like really good copies. And I think that's the only thing that really pisses me, if you like, that makes me angry.
Safe and sound, and they don't need no friends.
From the pen of Ray Davies, Waterloo Sunset, a number two hit in England in May 1967, was covered in 2006 by Def Leppard. Just when you think that Ray Davies' rapier wit and incisive observations are tough on the most imposing targets of society, you'll find that he saves his sharpest criticism for himself.
I think any sensible person who's at all creative has got an element of self-loathing in them. Yes, there's, with me they call it tongue-in-cheek. The secret is always make yourself get the brunt of it and not take it out on some other poor person. You know, because that's, I think that's the key to the best comedy as well. It's easy to take the piss out of people, you know, and to, it's easy to ridicule people. But, you know, to turn it in on yourself at the end of the day is important. And certainly in my stage performance, I always do that in the sense that, I guess, what is humour? I mean, you're just making yourself up, you know, just make yourself laugh at the world, and hopefully it'll make you feel like a better person. I think maybe that's what humour is. But to do it at somebody else's expense is not great. And it's just a cheap shot.
Originally on the 1969 Kinks album Arthur, that's Victoria. Next, Ray Davies makes a startling confession about the Kinks, preferring to play live rather than making recordings. I'm Redbeard in the studio with the Kinks' Ultimate Collection.
Welcome back in the studio. I'm Ray Davies of the Kinks with Redbeard.
Thanks again, Ray. Probably the closest the Kinks have come to a box set occurred in the mid-90s when they released the 2-CD live in the studio set called To the Bone. Here's songwriter, lead singer Ray Davies of the Kinks in the studio.
The Kinks have always been a very good live band, so I felt that this is a perfect balance for the band. We're not fond of studio recording. We never have been, because we started off as a dance band, really, getting gigs at colleges and things. And studio has always been a great... we find it boring recording tracks, because, as I say, the band like to get it first time. You know what musicians are like, the egomaniacs. I think there's an energy in the Kinks shows that goes a kind of a step further than that. It's the audience is very much part of what we do. And I think it's a kind of energy... It's a subliminal thing that goes on. People seem to know the audience to us is a very important factor in what we're doing. And it's not nice going out and seeing bands, you know, you like their hits and they duplicate their hits and thank you and good night and go home. There's more to it than that. I think there is a kind of... there's something else that goes on in a Kinks show. Sometimes it's nice and enjoyable. Other times it's hell out there. But you never know until we're on stage. It's... Similar, I think watching the Kinks is similar to going to a football game. You never know, you know who might win, but you can never tell until the final whistle. And it's a bit like a Kinks concert.
The taxman's taken all my dough and left me in my stately home, lazing on the sunny afternoon, and I can't sail my yacht. Taken everything I've got. All I've got's this sunny afternoon. Save me, save me, save me from this squeeze. I got a big fat mama trying to break me.
Let's hear you sing it, come on.
And I love to live so pleasantly. Live this life of luxury.
Come on.
Blazing on a sunny afternoon. In the summertime. In the summertime. In the summertime.
All together, come on.
Oh, save me, save me. From this squeeze, I got a big fat mama trying to break me, and I love to live so pleasantly, live this life of luxury.
Come on.
Blazing on a sunny afternoon.
Louder.
In the summer.
I think the Kinks have just entered the building.
Many years ago, a rock writer proposed that on any given night, the Kinks could be the greatest live band in the world. Or not. Here's Ray Davies.
Well, even when we're inconsistent, we're the best band in the world. In fact, it's when we're inconsistent that we are. I think when we try to be the best, it just never works out for us. I remember doing Madison Square Garden, going on stage. It was sold out. We did sold out two nights or whatever. Walked on stage and tripped over a lead and fell into the pit. Rock star isn't something you can really associate with the Kinks, because it's everything that we're anti. We've always been that way. And more various managers and record companies have tried to make us posture and be like rock gods. The more there's something in us that turns us off of that. I don't know what it is. Much as I'd like to be you know, on the front cover of Rolling Stone. No, Rolling Stone magazine. I know everybody would like us to be, have that sort of in our makeup, but you know, we're not the sort of band that lends itself to cover stories. Nothing. It's nothing to do with fame either. It's more to do with our attitude towards, I guess, the mainstream. Even though we could be regarded as a mainstream band, but within our peers, you know, we're regarded still, I think, as outsiders, which is fine by me. That's why, you know, I think there are lots of newer bands come along and they kind of identify with us, because we're not really, I suppose if they're the children of a family, we're not like older relatives. We're kind of sort of vagrant uncles have come back to the house, you know, Sunday for the free meal, you know, and they kind of drawn to us. And there's kind of an element of that, of the, you know, still the not the bad guys, but the outsiders, which I quite like.
Living with the rock and roll past, gracefully, hasn't been as easy for some of Ray Davis's peers. In the 1980s, various members of the Beatles, Rolling Stones, The Who, and Led Zeppelin were all reluctant to discuss their past for fear that it would preclude any artistic future. But one by one, these musicians have acknowledged their musical milestones and embraced their pasts. Ray Davis of the Kinks certainly can relate.
Listen, I can understand it, because it's, put yourself in their shoes, poor old boys. You know, they got stuff they want to write, I suppose. I could understand them not wanting to be sort of trapped by their past, because it's like saying to Picasso, you know, you can't paint any more pictures after the Blue Period. And he was 40 years old when he was going through that. Or Cubism, whatever. And unfortunately, it's not even the fans that say that. It's all the things you have to go through. I'm talking about media people, record companies, TV, radio. They're the people that sort of are judgmental on this. I think fans always have this theory. The great thing about playing live, it's the one occasion you can be one-on-one with your fans, without going through all the business of relying on somebody to cut the record, someone to press the record, to do the artwork, then to play the record. You know, it's the key holders, whatever they are. And I can understand, but I can, going back to your question, I can understand that the guy's being a little bit reticent about talking about the past too much. But, you know, I've never really had a problem with that, because even when I was 21, I was writing songs for my granddad to sing. They wrote songs, and the classic one is Pete, who wrote "Wish I Could Die Before I Get Old." He's not that old now; he's middle-aged now. There's nothing wrong with that, but it's a damning line to have written. If it's the work's good, be remembered for good work, and hopefully the new work you do will be better, or as good, or maybe not as good. But at least if you can function and write and perform, I think it's quite a blessing to be able to do that. So, but you've got to understand, these guys have tremendous egos. You know, I've no idea what it's like to have an ego, but they must have continual worries. You know, but coming, you know, when Robert Plant was 20, he had his first hit, and it was a sexually driven song. Led Zeppelin music was, you know, it was a head job, you know. It's more difficult to carry that off. Whereas I've had character songs, you know, Celluloid Heroes. I could be 90 years old when I'm singing that, and I wouldn't have to worry whether I'd be embarrassed by singing it, because I think it's kind of ageless.
Everybody's a dreamer, and everybody's a star, and everybody's in movies. Doesn't matter who you are, there are stars in every city, in every house and on every street. And if you walk down Hollywood Boulevard, their names are written in concrete. Don't step on Greta Garbo as you walk down the boulevard. She looks so weak and fragile, that's why she tried to be so hard. But they turned her into a princess, and they sat her on a throne. But she turned her back on stardom, because she wanted to be alone.
are the stars as you walk down Hollywood Boulevard. Some that you recognize, some that you've hardly even heard of. People who worked and suffered and struggled for fame. Some who succeeded and some who suffered in vain. He's liable to turn and bite. But stand close by Betty Davis, because hers was such a lonely life. If you covered him with garbage, George Saunders would still have style. And if you stamped on Mickey Rooney, he would still turn round and smile. But please don't tread on dearest Marilyn, she was only made of flesh and blood. You can see all the stars as you walk down Hollywood Boulevard. Some that you recognize, some that you hardly even heard of. People who worked and suffered and struggled for fame. And some who suffered in vain. Everybody's a dreamer, and everybody's a star, and everybody's in showbiz. It doesn't matter who you are. And those who are successful, be always on your guard. Success walks hand in hand with failure along Hollywood Boulevard. I wish my life was a non-stop Hollywood movie show. A fantasy world of celluloid villains and heroes. Because celluloid heroes never feel any. Celluloid heroes never feel any pain. And celluloid heroes never really die.
From the Kinks' 1972 album Everybody's in Showbiz, that's the sublime Celluloid Heroes. Here's the author and singer, Ray Davis.
I was living in, I was staying a lot in California, off, just off Hollywood Boulevard. We've got into meeting a lot of different characters. And I went back there recently, and basically the same characters are there. They're the aspiring people that come to this place that's got this magical quality to it, to get destroyed by it. I mean, it's a very destructive place. And yet, as destroyed as they get, if there's an opportunity to be an extra in a film, they'll grab the opportunity. Then it's not a coincidence that you've got a lot of religious cults around a place like Hollywood. You know, just around the back of Hollywood Boulevard now is a big Scientology hotel. There's a lot of religious cults around there. All you've got now on Hollywood Boulevard is prostitution, drugs, a few sleazy eateries, but wonderful. They've always been sleazy, and that's the magic of it. There's not really big money there. Most people go there because they expect all the glamour, but it's the sleaziest place, the most wonderful place to go, because the day is all you've got, because you're dead after the day, and tomorrow's another, you know, another slog. And you realise that more than anywhere else in this place, Hollywood, because it's so destructive and so seductive still to me. I was back there in the summer because I was finishing up this story I was writing about it. And it hadn't changed since I wrote that song. And it hasn't changed since then. You've still got the same characters there. It was just a wonderful time. And the song... You know, when you do research on a song and work it out properly, it really writes itself. The funniest thing about the record is that the original record is that we had to deliver an album in New York on the Monday, and we hadn't recorded this song and Celluloid Heroes and two other tracks for the album. So we went in Friday morning and recorded all through the weekend without a break. And the last track we did was Celluloid Heroes. And I was doing the vocals and mixing it at 9 o'clock in the morning on the Monday morning. And I was going to go straight to the airport to get on the plane, to take it to the States. And the sound engineer had to sort of sleep. He was asleep, but I made him sleep by the door so the next session couldn't get in. And I had to do the mix myself because the second engineer had gone home. And the main engineer, a guy called Mike Boback, I remember his name, Mike had to sleep by the door to keep the next session out. So we'd be thrown out. And it's when you hear that nice, gentle ending, you know, it dies away into sort of mystic, where someone's beating the door, shouting for us to get out of there.
I met her in a club down in Old Soho, where you drink champagne and it tastes just like Coca-Cola. C-O-L-A, Cola. She walked up to me and she asked me to dance. I asked her her name and in a dark brown voice she said Lola. L-O-L-A, Lola. La 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 Lola. Well, I'm not the world's most physical guy, but when she squeezed me tight she nearly broke my spine. Oh my Lord.
That's Ray Davis, who, along with the Kinks, was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I'm Redbeard.